Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Shit Show with J-Bo. Thanks so much for tuning in. Isn't it kind of nice? Like, when I was a kid, if you would have told me I could watch my cartoons, my Mighty Mouse, my He-Man, my G.I. Joe, at any old time I wanted, I could just download it. You know, I could watch it whenever. I would have thought that was the coolest fucking thing. I had no concept of time back then. I knew my show was on. I didn't realize it was on at a certain time. Also playing into that entire scenario once when I was in first grade. Actually, the first day of first grade, this is a crazy story. It's fairly formative in my life and I remember it. So I don't know if you'll think it's crazy, but what happened was I was going to first grade and about a week before first grade started, my mom and my grandfather would take me, drive me to school, then drive me back and say, this is where the bus is going to get off. This is where the bus gets off and you come through this gate and you come home. So the very first day of first grade, I actually met this kid named Cletus or named Bubba Sue. He went by both, I guess. Kind of a redneck kid, nice guy. Somehow, I befriended him the very first day. He's kind of an overweight kid, pudgy. Sorry, that is overweight. We had like blonde curly hair. It kind of looked like a more badass version of that blonde kid from Bad Santa. I think I remember him having boots. And yes, his name was Cleet, which is super like southern kind of good old boy name. But he lived in a trailer park. Not surprisingly, I suppose, and there's nothing wrong with living in trailer parks. I, too, lived in a trailer park with my mom and my brother, and I ended up ripping off my neighbor at the age of, like, six. I was, it was later that year. Man, that was a rebellious year for old J-Bo. I wanted the kid's toys, so I smashed his window and went in at the age, literally 6 years old. And I remember barely being able to shimmy between the bed and the wall, or like the window, rather, of the trailer park inside, getting up on his bed, going to his closet. There was nobody home, taking out his box of toys and going out the front door with them. So reverse to earlier that year, my first day of first grade. Wow, I never put it together that these two things that happened were the same year. But anyway, getting back to the story, I didn't understand that when I came home, they were expecting me at a certain time. I just understood that I was to go through a certain area as I walked through, and then they would know I was home. You know, so like at 2:30, I didn't realize they were waiting for me. I thought I could just kind of come home whenever, as long as I made it through that gate. So I got off the bus with my buddy Cleet, and I was playing with him. And it was near a place called PJ's, which was a pool hall. And it was on Volano Beach, and it was just really dusty. Volano Beach is a beautiful, it was a sleepy part of St. Augustine, Florida back then. Now it's probably not. It's all built up. And actually, St. Augustine is kind of, I don't think it's ruined. But if you tried to go there on a budget, you wouldn't have a lot of fun. You'd just be sweating it, because I'm sure everything's super expensive. Or if you tried to move there now, like most nice places. But this was back in like 1982, maybe 83. Nah, probably like 82, 81. Yeah, I was six. I was born in 75. But so I'm sitting there playing with Cleet. It was like a sandy space between two trailers. And I have these vague memories of just sitting there. We had some kind of toys we were messing with, probably his G.I. Joe. Those were huge then. I never really liked Star Wars figurines because they didn't have the movable elbows and necks. They were much too stiff. But G.I. Joes did have those things, and you could kind of pose them nicely. And probably my favorite G.I. Joe of all time was called Serpentor. I ordered that from No, I didn't order that one. That was the Refrigerator Perry. Serpentor I bought, and he had a chariot, but he was kind of special, and he had like a hooded cobra over his fucking face. Anyway, I digress. We were playing with some... It definitely wasn't Serpentor that we were playing with. We were playing some kind of G.I. Joe figure. And I saw my grandfather cruise by on a bike, and he's passed now, but he would have been about, I don't know, let's see... He passed and he was like 90 years old. I was, 40 probably. So he's 50 years older than me. I was 60. He was like in his mid 50s, right? And there was this blue bicycle and he cruised by and he probably, I don't know if he had shoes on, but he had shorts. And I can clearly remember thinking, oh shit, he's looking for me. There was a panic about him. He didn't even see me. I could just see him from about 30 yards. And I decided, holy shit. So I started running home. And I remember just being so tired, but I couldn't stop. You know, one of those times where you're just so stressed out and so tired that your mouth dries up and you're just like murmuring weird shit to yourself and you're just totally panicked. And like this moment will never pass. And before, you know, 2 minutes before you're having a great time and now you're totally panicked and can't even speak and your mouth's dried out and you're just tired, but you have to make it home. So I made it home. And right as soon as I made it home, he made it back from his bike ride looking for me. And right at that time, a male woman came by with a big ass thick phone book. Now, if you guys remember, I don't know how it goes anymore, but phone books maybe or maybe are not a thing. But back then, they were literally like 4 inches thick, and there was a white section and a yellow section. The yellow section is where you went to find all the businesses, and the white section is where you went to do prank phone calling with the last names of people, you know, or just find a number, and then you ripped out the page. It was like very thin papers, like really like almost like Bible paper, so you could rip it real easily. But anyway, the phone book showed up right as I showed up, right as my grandfather showed up. And that motherfucker laid into me with that phone book. All I remember is getting smashed in the face. It, crazy. He was not a very violent man, but he fucking hit me. And I think it may have knocked me out. If it didn't knock me out, I was playing possum and I was pretending like I was kind of sleeping, knocked out. And I woke up, you know, a little while later. And I remember trying to play it off like it was no big deal. And pretending that the lint on my feet between my toes was like spaceships and it was like a video game and they were shooting one another and I was making sound effects to try to kind of play the whole thing off because it was so fucking awkward. I don't even know if I knew what I had done wrong, but I'd come back, you know, an hour later and it was his nerves. His nerves got the best of him and he laid into me. Oh man, a 6-year-old. I don't know that he ever apologized for that, but he brought it up quite a few times. Even when he was like so fucking out of it towards the end of his life, he brought it up at Sonny's Real Pit Barbecue. He said something about the phone book and we both looked at each other and it was a strange memory, man. So I don't even know where the fuck I was going with that. That's one of the great things about the shit show at J-Bo. Tangential. Moving way, 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 way far out to the left, even way, way, way far out to the right, and coming back. Speaking of that, a guy at work, speaking of moving to the far right, a guy at work said he saw me in my Make America Great Again hat, and he asked me, he's like, it's kind of weird that you wear that. Like, it takes balls to wear that hat, and it doesn't around here. There's a lot of, like, people that are kind of into that type of thing. I wouldn't wear it in, like, D.C. or Baltimore. I mean, I might, but... I don't know. I would walk briskly to and from where I was going if I were to wear it in like a major city. And he said it's kind of crazy that it's such a weird thing to do to support the president to wear a red hat. And he asked me, how did I feel wearing it? And he's like, from the outside in, he just thought it was weird that it was so – the people were so hostile towards it. And I was thinking, well, it is kind of like waving a red cape in front of a bull. It's really weird. Just the red, you know, blood. Red is a natural color that just brings boils to people's minds, you know, boils people's minds and, you know, the sight of blood, right? So I don't know. I don't know what Trump's deal was with the red hat. I don't know who wore the red hat better, Trump or Fred Durst? Did you notice that? People hate people in red hats. I don't know what it is, but the people wearing the red hats feel a sense of power, evidently. Because that's what I told him. I said, well, I don't know, man. I was like, when I wear the MAGA hat, I have to be in a certain mood. And the mood is kind of like, fuck you. It's like, fuck you. I don't care. It's not that big of a deal. The dude is the president. I think he's funny. I think he's a shit kicker, and I think he's anti-censorship. I don't think he's perfect. But when I wear that hat, I'm literally like, fuck you. Don't tell me what to think. Don't tell me who to like. Your propaganda makes me sick. It's childish, and I could give two shits. So it was interesting for somebody to ask me why, what it was like wearing a MAGA hat. I thought that was pretty cool. So anyway, would you guys ever wear a MAGA hat, even if you supported somebody? I mean, the other day, even if you supported Trump, would you? Does anybody out there support Trump? Would you wear a fucking MAGA hat? I don't know. Am I fucking insane? I've been doing it since before he was elected, because I went to the Republican National Convention and kind of just bought one on a whim. But, you know, it was like Kanye said, it was like that superhero cape. Anyway, I'm not going to get political today. It's just dumb. It's also opinionated, and it's so hard to be objective. And I feel like at some point I just run out of thoughts and sound like a total fucking moron. And then it leads me to conspiracy theories that my dad would certainly agree with, that my dad, amazing dude. He was diagnosed schizophrenic, and I do think he's onto a lot of things, but, you know, thinking that the mind control is literally like sapping the ideas from your head if you try to talk about certain things is pretty fucking out there. But talking about politics sometimes on a microphone leads me to believe those type of things. I don't really believe them, but, you know, you can entertain certain bizarre conspiracy theories and understand that they probably are bullshit, right? Like, I enjoy the thought of, you know, thinking like maybe Kurt Cobain, for instance, was murdered, you know. That's intriguing to me. Maybe Courtney Love did it, that fucking bitch. But in reality, I know that I don't know who wasn't there. And that's the thing about conspiracy theories. If you weren't there, any rabbit hole looks good. You can go down anything, anywhere. And it all can make sense because you weren't there. Speaking of Kurt Cobain, I'm reading a book called Serve the Servant, and it's by Danny Goldberg. Danny Goldberg was his manager during his major label times, and I don't know if it's a great book. I can't tell, but it's an enjoyable book. I realize that I don't have ADD so bad that I can't read a book anymore. The constant beckoning of my cell phone or YouTube videos or my notifications, you know, coming up on my cell phone, they haven't totally disrupted my attention span, which I guess is what they were meant to do, to really fragment us. But then I was thinking, the bright side is I can multitask. I can drive and be watching an episode of, you know, Pawn Stars and texting and be zipping around, you know, hairpin turns in my car. And, yes, it's dangerous, but I do it pretty well, and that's a skill I would not have been able to. I have to develop that skill since I've got a cell phone and a car over the past 5 or 6 years. I've had a car for longer than that, you know, but cell phone. No, I'm sorry. I had a cell phone for about 10 years now. I think I got one when I was 33. So anyway, I'm reading this Kurt Cobain book, and I remembered I can read again. Okay, great. So that means this is my entrance drug back into. I used to read a lot when I was a kid, but now I'm just on the go, and like I said, kind of fragmented. And you probably understand that by the way I'm speaking from one thing to the other, but I enjoy it on a podcast. I think it's fun. They said Robin Williams did something like this, although he was a bloody genius and fucking hilarious. You know, I got to meet Robin Williams once. He was shooting a bizarre movie by Bobcat Goldthwait just up from my house. The movie was called World's Greatest Dad, and the school that they were shooting at was right up from my house, so I would go and watch them shoot, you know. And I remember a couple scenes from the movie that I saw them shoot, and it was a really cool experience. And I'd see Robin Williams, and I waved at him. My two interactions with Robin Williams. One day I waved at him, and he rolls down the window with his sunglasses and goes, "Hey, dude." hey, dude. And he pointed at me. Then the second time I went up to him and I said, hey, man, how you doing? I'm a big fan of Death to Smoochie. And he goes, Death to Smoochie. And his body double is sitting right next to him, like standing right next to him. It's a guy that from the back or the side looks exactly like him and is dressed exactly the same, but just a body double for filming purposes. It was kind of surreal. But anyway, I'm talking to the actual Robin Williams, and he said, if I liked Death to Smoochie, then I should definitely check out the movie Shakes the Clown. It's about an alcoholic clown, and it's another Bobcat Goldthwait film. So I don't know if you guys know about Bobcat Goldthwait, but he's a bizarre motherfucker. He was in Police Academy. He was the guy that had the crazy way of speaking, real spastic, almost like he had Tourette's with the wild faces and the crazy hair and could barely get out these words because he would stammer. But I love Bobcat, and his movies are so bizarre. Like, he has this one movie called Sleeping Dogs Lie, and at the beginning, this, like, college co-ed blows her dog. She like, sucks her dog's dick, and then, she was, like, drunk and sucked her own dog's cock, and how many more times can I say that? And, you know, she serviced her dog's, you know, peccaroo, whatever. That's just stupid. That's silly. But later in the movie, she felt like she had to tell her husband that she had sucked a dog off. And he left her. And that was the moral of the story, is like, let sleeping dogs lie. You know, like, things in your past, just, you don't have to say everything. You don't have to clear your conscience like that. So Bobcat Goldthwait's a fucking crazy dude. And World's Greatest Dad was a twisted movie. It was about a kid who killed himself during autoerotic asphyxiation. Like, so he accidentally killed himself. Autoerotic asphyxiation is when you keep a lemon nearby, like in your mouth, and then you masturbate while you put something around your neck and you're choking yourself. And apparently it's supposed to be like a really sweet orgasm. But it's really dangerous because somebody's not there. You can literally just hang yourself. And I guess you put the lemon in your mouth so that if you bite down or have a seizure or something, that you'll spring back to life. I don't know exactly. But that's what happened in this movie. And it's Robin Williams' kid who died in this way. And so the dad can't have his son die like that. So he wrote him a suicide note. And the suicide note, like, went viral. And this kid became a hero, like, in the afterlife. It's just bizarre. But anyway, check out Bobcat Goldthwait. That's my movie recommendation for this episode of The Shit Show with J-Bo. Bobcat Goldthwait. So how the hell is everybody out there? I'm sorry. I feel like I'm talking a mile a minute. I've had a fair amount of caffeine in the past couple hours. I did some pre-workout, and I worked out. And now I'm working on my second Diet Coke. Let me get a swig of this real quick. I'm at my cousin's house. I'm looking out at the pool. And looking out at all these great kids' toys, you know? There's a fucking pink Barbie minivan right next to me. And it looks like it runs, you know? Probably runs 10 miles an hour. It looks dope. So I'm sitting here. I was just watching Cobra Kai. Cobra Kai is Karate Kid 2018 and 19. And basically, the great thing about it is it's exactly the same world as it was in Karate Kid, except for the people are older. And Daniel LaRusso owns a car dealership. And Sweep the Leg Johnny Lawrence, the bad guy, the bully, who actually it shows, and I believe they're onto something, that he wasn't exactly the bully. Machio kind of bullied him in a way, possibly. Don't quote me on that, but I believe, you know, it could have gone either way depending on your perspective. And it's an amazing series. Get it. It's on YouTube Premium. I think you can watch the first two episodes on YouTube. But that's my TV recommendation. Man, it's all about entertainment. Isn't it? Right? And why do we do it? Like, why do we make shit, put it out to the world? It's such an interesting concept. If anybody out there has never put anything into the world as far as art goes, as far as maybe a podcast, it's a very strange type of, like, neurosis and neurotic train of thought and pressure, for me at least, and I'm assuming anybody, because it's so easy. Like, you hear somebody's music, and whether it's good or bad, you don't think too much about it. But when you put music out into the world, it's a whole it's a weird thing because you're kind of competing. Like, at least that's how I feel. I'm kind of competing with anything these people have ever heard, but you're doing it on like, because they're hearing like the cream of the crop of the world, and you're doing it kind of on a budget. So you give it to people, you're like, hey, just keep in mind that this is pretty cool, man. You like it? You have to suspend disbelief because I know you're probably not used to hearing underground, like DIY, low-budget music. But can you suspend disbelief for just a second and imagine? Well, I don't know. You don't suspend disbelief that the production's better, but just think about what maybe I did to put into this. Like, listen to those lyrics. I mean, could you do that? Would you ever want to do that? Put yourself out there like that? It's a very strange thing. Listen to those lyrics. Listen to that melody. You hear that guitar? Hear that guitar line from Homeboy? Well, I wrote all that, and that's my cousin Vinny playing drums. So the reason why I'm talking about this, because I guess the theme of this particular episode really is the recording that I just finished, basically. And first of all, hey, Jamie and your wife. I'm not sure what her name is, man, but I'm sure she's great, and thank you for listening to the shit show with J-Bo. Please, I appreciate that, man. Any kind of enthusiasm regarding this show is radical. And I see the numbers, folks. We got some nice numbers. I'm quite happy with the numbers most of the week. So keep it coming. Keep listening. Kick it off to a friend. Go share it. Share a link. Go give me a fucking like. Give me a 5-star review on iTunes. Say something nice, because this is just being put out into the universe by myself. And that's what I live. I live off it. Actually, I don't care what you guys do. I don't care if you even like it. Not you, Jamie. I'm just saying anybody. Like, you can't look at it that way. You kind of have to do it for yourself is what I'm trying to say. And it is, you keep saying it, and let this sink in. When you do art, when you do things, I think the right reason is they are their own reward. Now, whether you choose to keep doing it because of monetary or life reasons or whatever, but to do it in the first place, you have to look at it as its own reward, and you can never really go wrong. Like, I'm not looking for listens. I'm not looking for money. I'm not looking for anything aside from, I mean, all that stuff's nice, but I do it to express myself, and I hope you guys enjoy it. And thank you for the kind words, Jamie Hebert. And by the way, me and Jamie met over there at the Ariel Pink Nymph posting Facebook page, which is great. Go check that out. Ariel Pink's actually on it, and he's like a fucking genius. And I've been so engulfed in my own stuff that I've kind of forgotten about Ariel Pink. I haven't forgotten about him, but I listened to his latest record so many fucking times that I just sucked the marrow right out of it. I chewed all the nutrients out. Now I'm just chewing on it, and I got to kind of wait till it reconstitutes, and maybe I'll eat it again, or maybe he'll put out a new record. But I think he's doing a bunch of reissues this year. But anyway, thanks, Jamie, for listening. Shout out, brother. And I mixed. Okay, let me get myself together here. I went to a studio in Johnstown like 10 days ago. I finally got some of the mixes back, and I have this like interesting relationship with listening to them. I've been listening to them now for a week, and I'm thinking about the little edits I'm doing and whether I could do it better or whether I could take it somewhere else to get remixed. But the fact is, like, I went into this thing and I knew it was going to be rough. I knew it was going to be like rough around the edges and ramshackle and hopefully awesome. I knew the songs were really good. And to be honest, I couldn't be more pleased with how they came out. There's a couple minor adjustments, but they sound beautiful. It is precisely what they are, which is all you can wish for. The songs sound as good as they actually are. It's high fidelity, kind of. It's a little bit clumsy sounding, but they're all there, and they're great tunes, and I think they're a fair representation of these songs. And when I first heard it, it was kind of like when I heard about Peter Buck, listening to the first time he heard Chronic Town, REM's first EP, which is a 5-song, which I think is their best work they've ever done. Honestly, REM still, the first thing they ever done is their best. It's a 5-song EP. And I heard upon Peter Buck listening to it that he just smashed it on the concrete. He was so fucking pissed off. And that's kind of how I felt about this. I just had this, it's like when I would have a weird practice with the band, it just means so much to me. I know it's silly, right? Because whatever, but when I finished mixing, it was a 10-hour day of mixing. It was grueling. I just had this sickening feeling like, oh my God, we fucking rushed through that. And I don't even know. We didn't even have time to like go back through it and anything. Like we were making these decisions and all this stuff and you just don't know. And I just spent $350 to mix this shit down. And oh my God, now I got to drive back 2 hours. But that's not how the session started. The session started like you're fucking hyped, you know. I got a coffee in me and I'm going. And the first song, it's like, all right, well, you don't want to take too long on this first song, but who cares? We got all night. But then you realize, oh shit, I just spent like 3 hours on this first song. We've only got 10 hours and the second song started to take time. And at some point it kind of wears you down and you can't be objective anymore. You're just going on like the sixth bottle of whatever for caffeine purposes. And it was all a blur. We mixed it down, me and Pete Drevere. And let me set the scene for you. It looks like an industrial building in Youngstown, Ohio. And he has a great studio and he played the shit back and we put effects on. He kind of got a general complexion of how the stuff was going to sound. Then I came in and said, hey, could you bring up that vocal? Could you edit that part out? Could you shave this end off? Could you put a fucking, you know, flange on that vocal? Could you put a little more slapback echo reverb? Could you make that sound a little bit more like, you know, what's that song about? Let's not pretending, they'll pretend I was on the town. Found flowers on the wall that don't bother me at all. Playing solitaire till dawn with the deck of 51. Smoking cigarettes and watching Captain Kangaroo. And I don't tell me I've nothing to do. Anyway, one of the songs reminds me of that song. And I've heard that song on the Pulp Fiction soundtrack, which is still an excellent soundtrack. I mean, it feels too much like the 90s to me to listen to it, but it's really good. You know, it's telling this guy to like, you have no idea what's in my head, but let's try to make these. But that's actually a good thing when you're mixing down to give it to somebody who doesn't really know what's in your head, because sometimes what's in your head is unrealistic and they can look at it objectively and just mix it. I think he did a great job. And I listened to them the first time. I was like, oh God, man, I can't believe that. I listened to them the second time and I'm like, oh, pretty good. Then the third time, I'm like, fucking great. And it goes back and forth. Sometimes I listen to them and I fucking love them. Sometimes I listen to them and I go, is this fucked up? Is it? You can't even tell. You're so close to it. You're trying to put yourself in other people's shoes to listen to these four songs that I recorded in Youngstown, Ohio. It's a strange process. It's a weird can of worms to open up. You guys know? Go ahead. You guys should start a podcast or make something, write a story, something, anything you can do, and put it out into the world and see what people think. Anyway, these are not out into the world yet, but I was going to put one at the end of this podcast, but I'm not going to because they aren't mastered yet. I want to get them mastered first, and I want to do a couple small edits. As much as I would like to share this one song called Two Good Boys or Jailbreak or Bathwater Music or Painter's Garden, they've all got slightly interesting stories to me anyway. Anyway, they've all got stories, probably not interesting to anybody but me. As soon as it's mastered, as soon as I edit it, I will put it out and you guys will be the first to know. If it gets mastered by like next week, I'll put one of them on there for you guys. I hope you enjoy it and do whatever you want with it. Basically, I'm going to put it on a Bandcamp page. I'm going to get some artwork for it. I think I'm going to call it the Skinned Mia Dear Boys EP. And that may or may not be the band name, but that's what this first little EP is going to be known as. And it basically is to catch people's ears and brains and maybe lead to bigger and better things. But if not, I'll probably put out a single. I definitely will. I don't know, put on iTunes and send it around. I don't know what the fuck I'm going to do with it. I'm going to try to promote it though, basically, and see, you know, just see what people's reaction to the best parts of it. And you guys are welcome to buy it, you know, Shit Show at Jabo, support us. All funds will go to, you know, probably McDonald's, probably fast food. But, you know, that's all part of keeping me alive and keeping me doing this stuff. So it's every little bit helps. But yeah, I'm pretty fucking excited about that. And I was kind of going for a Dead Moon sound. And I love Dead Moon. They're one of my favorite bands. And they had so much integrity. They're not around anymore. Only Tootie. There's only one surviving member of Dead Moon. Her name is Tootie Cole, and she's badass. I actually name-checked her and Fred in a song that didn't go on this EP. But it's a good one, and it's conceptual, and it's complete, and it's classic. And I can't wait to record it. I just haven't done that yet. So I told you guys a couple weeks ago that we had a cat that died, and that was super tragic, and my girlfriend was just shattered. I mean, she saw it dead, and she came home, and she loved this boy so much, and he was actually featured in one of the podcasts about 4 weeks ago, but she wanted another kitty, and I promised her another kitty, and it's kind of cute. You know, turned tragedy, and you can't replace a cat. You can't replace any kind of being. You can't replace a drummer either. It's just not how shit works. You think you can, or, you know, there's a chemistry that happens organically in every path of life, and you just can't replace that. It's a mind trick. It's delusional. And so whatever, the point is, she wanted another cat, and she thought it was going to replace Buffalo, and I knew it wouldn't, but I wanted her to have another cat. So she got this little guy. We named it Urfy Firefly. And it's a cute little raggedy looking, like kind of hungry and kind of like lanky and lean, this cool little cat. And beautiful little boy with really, really handsome, really nice markings. A lot of hair coming out of its ears. And she loves the cat, but it's not a cuddly cat. She wanted a cuddly cat. She just wanted a cat that would sleep with her. And she would call me, like, just crying, basically, and like, insulting me. It was just because she was so pissed off that she got this cat and it wasn't cuddling with her. And I understand. I have empathy. It's my girlfriend. I love her. I just, it was a hard situation because she basically was, like, being horrible to me because the cat wouldn't cuddle, you know? And so she kept going, like, I want another cat. I love this cat, but he's not good around my son. He just hides in the corner. He doesn't want to cuddle me. But there's this other cat in Ohio. And I said, no, cat, we can't have three cats. We can't have three fucking cats. I didn't even want one cat. But now you want a third? No, I can't do it. I'm sorry, sweetie. No. I don't care how cute you look in that shirt. I can't do it. But then eventually it's just like she was just being so terrible about it. And look, she's not a terrible person. She's great. I'm just saying she was in such a bad place because she didn't have that outlet for that love, you know, for that cat. And hell, maybe I should be around more. You know, I'm not home that much. So I guess I'm thankful that she uses a cat to love on and not some other human. So at some point she just wore me down. I said, get the motherfucking cat. I said, go ahead, please just get the cat. Just go get the fucking cat. We'll give away one of those other cats, or whatever. You know, I knew we probably wouldn't, but like, go get the cat. So she drove and got this little puffball, man. And the cat, we haven't named it yet, but it is really fucking cute. It's like kind of off-white with this little birthmark on its nose, and it's just adorable. It's got these blue eyes, and I just saw it, and she's so fucking happy. It's like her pride and joy, this little cat, and she's just like, she's just all about it, and it cuddles with her, and it's real mellow. I mean, it might be half retarded, but it's it's mellow, you know, and it's a beautiful little cat. And when I'm working the next morning, I sleep in a separate bedroom because I can't sleep. I have to have dead silence. I just get mad because I like my sleep is so precious. So I came in this morning and the cat was still laying in bed with her and her son. And I said, oh, that's so beautiful. And she's so happy. And I just woke her up and, hey, and I was like, look at the kitty, you know, and she just smiling. So in the end, keeping the girlfriend happy was much more important than my potential future space issues with the cat. And you know, I don't know. She's happy. I'm happy. And I just felt this sense of calm when she was happy about it. So it was enriching. It was like enriching to my life and in her life. And she loves the cat. We are not going to let the cats out because the last one got killed. We let it do its thing and we regret it. But, you know, so there you go. That's what's going on in my life. Shit, man. What else? I have a list of things to talk about today. Well, you know, seeing as one of my listeners asked me about my lentil soup recipe, I made spaghetti last night. Not from scratch. I just doctored up some bomb-ass sauce from Giannilli's. It's an Italian place, like two doors down. Pennsylvania area is filthy rich with Italian food. It's like when I was in Seattle, Asian food was the thing that was amazing there, and you couldn't really get a lot of other places. But in Greensburg, in the area, it's a lot of Italians. My cousins are half Italian. My girlfriend's half Italian. And there's just bomb-ass bomb, bomb.com, bombwaze, bomb-ass Italian food, spaghetti everywhere. You know, it's like spaghetti dinner night, whoa, and you'll see like young people going to eat spaghetti. It's weird. It seems like an old person thing, but anyway, I got a jar of sauce, and so I sauteed some. I had my girlfriend's son with me, and I wanted to teach him to cook because I think it's so important to cook. I think it's such a zen thing. It's so beautiful to cook. I love cooking. I'm not great at it. I'm okay at it. Like I can cook for myself, and I'm getting better, and I enjoy it, right? So what else is there? But I sauteed up, I sliced these really super hot peppers, and I made the mistake of, you know, real thin and putting them in there, but the oil was fucking hot as fuck, so they burnt immediately. And if you ever had like acrid smoke from a hot pepper, anything else can burn and it's okay, it just smells like smoke, but you burn a hot pepper and it's actually like you're tasting it with the smoke, so you breathe it in and it kind of burns your fucking, you know, your sinuses and you cough. And so that's what I did, unfortunately, but it was okay. I turned the heat down. I sliced up some garlic real nice in there with some garlic oil, or sorry, some olive oil. I learned this killer way to cut an onion, and it changed. It was a cutting onion hack, and it was amazing. You basically cut the onion down the middle, and you leave the root, you cut it right through the root, and you leave the root on there, and you slice it, and the root kind of holds it all together. And it's just a really easy way to really slice an onion. I learned that from Chef Ramsey. And so I sliced that onion real fine, got that saute and sizzle, smelled real nice. Then I put I'm really into the colors of things. Like it has to be balanced in color. I don't feel quite right about it. And I knew it was a red sauce and I wanted something green, something yellow. So I got a yellow squash and I cut that down the middle. I sliced that up real fine, threw that in there. And then I got a bell pepper and cut that. Threw that bad boy in there, some mushrooms, you know, for the classic sauce, and just sauteed the fuck out of them. And then right when they're about done, I turned the heat up super high, right? I just turned it up super high and got it sizzling to the point of like the shit's almost gonna burn. And then I got the cold sauce, the red sauce, the base sauce, and just bam, threw that in there, and tsh, you hear that fucking that sizzle. And the sizzle tells you that you deglaze the pan. Now, it's an interesting concept, and I may be using it wrong, but basically, you get stuff so hot that the flavor's embedded in the pan, then you hit it with liquid, and all of a sudden, boom, all that flavor just comes right up. It comes right back into it. And then I brought that sauce up to a boil, and I added some tomato paste to make it thick, turned that bad boy back down, made some noodles with it. Bam. Put it on the noodles, put a little Italian cheese on there, and it was gooey, and it was tasty, and it was bomb, man. It was bomb. It was really, really good. And with that, I want to thank you guys for listening to the Shit Show at J-Bo today. We've been going about 40 minutes. It's been a dream. It's been a breeze. It's been so good to talk to everybody out there. It feels like it's been forever, but it hasn't. I just did kind of an early podcast last week. I think I recorded it Monday, and I recorded today like a day late, so it's been like 9 days. But it's always awesome. I can't wait. We're about halfway through the year. Every week you can expect another Stream of Consciousness podcast. And yeah, thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you next time. This is the Shit Show with J-Bo, and have a beautiful week, okay? Bye.